This week on Tapestry, we're off to Warsaw in Wyoming County, where we meet three women with a strong business sense and big ideas for their town.
As a woman-owned business, Burly Bears continue to grow. I feel like I'm able to really tell the story of agriculture.
What goes best with a hot cup of coffee? A mug you made yourself at the Studio Arts Cafe.
I had this dream where I saw people sitting, drinking coffee, surrounded by artwork, people creating artwork, making a mess, having fun. I was like, man, if I ever get that chance, I'm gonna give it a try.
Then it's off to the movies with the woman who saved the last remaining movie theater in the county.
Opening day was nerves and chaos. We dressed up in tuxes and ball gowns. We had a sold out crowd, and then we went upstairs to use our brand new digital projector, and it did not start.
That's coming up on Tapestry right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Today, we're celebrating three Warsaw women shaping their community. We begin at Burley Berries and Blooms, where Megan Burley met Ryan. Get this, on farmersonly.com. They found love and turned it into an incredible life. Ryan, Megan, thank you for hanging out with us for this afternoon. We are so glad because we know you're super busy.
Thank you for being here.
Warsaw is fabulous. And I think, you know, we've got a great show lined up with three really unique stories. But I would have to say meeting on farmersonly.com maybe takes the cake for uniqueness. Talk to me about how you met and why farmersonly.com.
Well, at the time, let's see here, this was 2011. Agriculture wasn't as popular as it is right now, I'd say. We were talking about this last night with FFAs and on schools starting up again. So it was very hard to find someone who had similar ideas, similar morals, and similar ways about them in regards to agriculture and their passion for it. So one day I just happened to be browsing the internet and came across this fancy website, and I thought to myself, well, there should only be farmers on this website, so I gave it a try.
So what was it about her profile that interested you?
Well, when she had on there, it said that currently milking cows, I figured, well, there's got to be some interest here, so I clicked the line to communicate, I guess.
Well, because you come from a dairy farming family.
I do, yes.
Meg, did you always want to be involved in agriculture? Was that always a desire of yours?
It was. Yeah. But what really got me engaged in it is Pennsylvania has something called Governor's School.
Okay.
And you apply to attend it. And the governor essentially pays for you to go. And ours was housed at Penn State. So there's like a healthcare one, agriculture, engineering, all of those different careers. And I attended the agriculture one, and I realized there's people out there with similar interests as me. I had planned on going back home and taking over the vegetable farm with Dad and kind of expanding that. Didn't plan on moving to New York.
But Ryan, you grew up in a farming family as well.
I did.
Did you always think that agriculture was something that was going to be part of your future?
Well, I never really left the farm, I guess. Even out of high school, I worked a part-time or a full-time job and did the farming thing as a part-time thing. I guess I just liked working that hard and at the end of the day, turning around and seeing what got accomplished and just feeling good about it.
And I think for us, there's nothing closer to God than working in his environment. So for us, I think that really grounds us as a family.
Mm-hmm. When you launched Burley Berries and Blooms, what was the dream and how has it evolved to include the creamery, you pick berries, and flowers?
We started with a half acre of strawberries, and then we did a lot of you pick at the very beginning for the strawberries. And then we started to try to look into some blueberries. And then, what was it, 2017, I think, we added the cut flower field. I did a 50 by 50 cut flower field because I always grew flowers as a kid because I just loved it. And I was like, you know, I bet we can financially glean something off of a flower field. When I first moved to New York, and I worked for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Erie County for almost 6 years.
Okay. And what were you doing with them?
So I did farm business management up there with them. So I worked with a lot of the guys in Eden and did a lot of labor work and as well as beginning farmer work. So I started a beginning farmer discussion group. And then we had Lena, and I decided to go part-time with Cornell. Burley Berries continued to grow. A position came open at Perry Central School District to start an ag program. And Perry is 5 minutes from my house. So I worked at Perry for 3 school years and got that all going. And I did everything at school completely hands-on. And that's when I came to Ryan and I said, I think we should build a creamery. I had a friend in Pennsylvania who just built one and I watched her whole story go down and it just made a lot of sense. So I'm a very risk-averse person.
I have a tendency to be a little bit more methodical sometimes and give me an idea and I'll think about it for a while and come up with a good answer.
Well, we got a grant through Northeast SARE to do a feasibility study on, is a micro creamery a feasible thing for a dairy farm to even consider?
Okay.
So we visited, up to 10 micro creameries in the Northeast. And then we looked at potentially building a creamery or working with Don's Dairy Supply, who built our creamery for us, to build kind of like what I call like a modular manufactured building, which is in our shipping container.
In this entire episode of Tapestry, we are focused on telling stories of strong women, women business owners, and you are one of those. You've said that Burley Berries is 100% yours, and that your role, Ryan, I hear you're a great repair guy.
I'm a jack of all trades.
Also, we purchased the milk from the dairy that he runs.
Okay.
So that's the big piece of it. Without Ryan, there would be no Burley Berries.
Gotcha.
Yes.
But what does it mean for you to lead a farm and a creamery as a woman in this space?
That can be complicated. And I remember even teaching about women in agriculture because it's more and more today than it used to be. And I've always had to get a seat at the table. As a woman-owned business, I feel like I'm able to really tell the story of agriculture, communicating to the public about what's happening on a farm. And I think that's a missing piece that we have in agriculture. 'Cause the consumers...
You're bridging the knowledge gap.
Yes.
Why is that important to you and what do you offer?
I think all businesses are better when we collaborate. I don't care if you're the same as me, but if we collaborate, we're still doing wonderful things together.
When you look around at what you've been able to accomplish in these years that you've been together, are there certain moments where you're like, wow, I can't believe we did this?
I feel like I'm so in the weeds that I don't get to sit back and think about that often.
Ryan, how about you then?
I think we keep doing it for our children. We keep it together so that they have an opportunity. Like we had an opportunity when we were of age to do something. We keep it going for them.
So when families come and they're doing the U-Pick, what is that? You're smiling. What does that make you feel?
It feels good. There are moms that'll come on just their own accord, set out a blanket, and just have a picnic. So we've provided a space where moms feel comfortable. And I think some of that is because they see me being a mom, watching moms. And like with our CSA pickup, the kids come and they pick out their flowers. And it's just, that's the best part of this whole experience. Yeah.
Your website says, we make good food for good people. And that's a simple statement, but it's pretty powerful. What does that phrase mean to the both of you?
I really think with our food, I want to know all of my ingredients in my food, and that now we've put ourselves in a position to be able to do that and provide that for our community. And I don't think, like when I'm making a lavender moon milk, that doesn't have fake purple in it. I use purple sweet potatoes. Like, I'm going back to the history of where our food came from, and it's a good way to eat. And it makes good people.
Good food for good people. And a business built to share it.
It's time to head to Main Street and the Studio Arts Cafe, where owner Stephanie Russell pours the same spirit into a welcoming space for coffee, conversation, and art. That's up next, right after this snapshot of Warsaw history.
Nestled in Wyoming County, the village of Warsaw once held a surprising claim to fame. It was the nation's largest producer of table salt. Production centered around the extraction of brine from deep underground. In the late 1800s, 8 salt wells fueled an industry so powerful it nearly doubled the town's population in just 2 years. The boom transformed Warsaw's landscape, Victorian storefronts, gaslit streets, and the grand civic heart of Monument Circle all rose from that salt-driven prosperity. While the salt industry eventually dried up, Warsaw never stopped working the land. Today, the community thrives through another resource, agriculture. Rolling hills now give way to dairy herds, family-run maple syrup operations, and orchards heavy with apples. Agriculture isn't just an economic engine here. It's a tradition, passed from one generation to the next. Where salt once put Warsaw on the map, it's now milk, maple, and apples that sustain its place in Western New York. Warsaw's story reminds us, from deep underground to fertile fields, this village has always drawn strength from the land.
Welcome back to Tapestry. Nestled on North Main Street in Warsaw, Studio Cafe is more than a place to grab a great latte. It's a celebration of community, creativity, and one woman's dream brought to fruition. Stephanie Russell transformed her passion for warm drinks and creative art into a gathering place where locals and visitors alike can find comfort and inspiration.
What brought you to Warsaw?
I am originally from Russell, Pennsylvania, but my husband and I met at Bible College in Lima, New York, and then he joined the military before we got married, and we were stationed in England, and we were there for 5.5, 6 years. And when we moved back, we kind of had this conversation like, do you want to live with your family in Springville or with my family in Pennsylvania? But every time we'd visit, we'd also visit our friends that lived in Warsaw.
Oh.
We were like, what if we raise our family with other friends who are also raising their kids? So
wow.
Just kind of felt right.
Talk to me about living in England, though. That must have been a bit of a culture shock.
It was wonderful. It's beautiful countryside. They only build with natural materials there, like wood and stone and brick. That spoke to my romantic, artsy heart.
Did that have anything to do with the inspiration for what you've created here today?
Maybe intuitively it did. I had been teaching at a Christian school and it just wasn't my thing. Like, my heart was sad and I was like, why is my heart sad, you know?
Yeah.
And my husband and I talked and he's like, maybe it's time to step down and do something else.
How did you start Studio Cafe?
I'd always wanted to open a coffee shop. And then I had this dream where I saw people sitting, drinking coffee, surrounded by artwork, and then also a different part of the space, people creating artwork, making a mess, having fun. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. It just spoke to something very deep inside of me. And I was like, man, if I ever get that chance, I'm going to give it a try. I mean, my desire for pottery just kind of cropped up one day. I just suddenly had a deep desire to do it. And I took one beginner class in pottery on throwing and hand building and pinch pots, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So I started saving money, which I've never really been good at. And so I got a waitressing job on top of that. I was helping my neighbor who was elderly. I worked at the Y teaching art classes, and I was selling my art. So I had 5 different kind of sources of income in maybe a 1 year span of time.
Okay.
And just anything that came in, I'd put away. I just put away. And then when my husband said, what are you going to do? I was like, I'm already like prepared. I know what I want to do. I have the money to do it. And so we rented a 600 square foot storefront and opened. It was a dream born inside of me, and it was like when you have a baby, it must come out eventually.
Wow.
Just rose to the surface, you know, something the Lord planted in my heart.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And it was in there. It was internal, and I could not ignore it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just don't have a choice in that.
That's
right?
True.
It just becomes the thing that we become.
Exactly.
Right? How did going from a storefront in like a strip mall situation to being in this incredible building happen?
Well, I did not like paying rent to somebody else. I think that that's where it really started. And as an entrepreneur, it just doesn't make sense for me to give this away and never see it again every single month. And I thought, I'm going to look for a place. I'm going to look for our own space, whatever that means. And I was scrolling through Facebook Marketplace one day, and this space was listed as an apartment. And I was looking at the pictures, and I'm like, this looks like a restaurant. And it turns out it was the old Rock and Roll Barbecue restaurant that they were trying to lease. And then we eventually said, how much for the whole building? And they were like, well, it's not really listed for sale. They ended up selling it to us in the end. I mean, it's a much longer story, but
sure.
You know,
at the end of the day, they said, well, gosh, if you're interested in the whole building, I suppose we could come up with a price.
So wow. They did. They ended up selling us something that wasn't for sale.
So not only do you sell delicious coffee and lattes, I know because I'm drinking a cup of coffee right now, you sell and offer beautiful art. Talk to me about how you work with artists and how your business is set up to support those artists.
So the gallery walls in the cafe, we just invite artists in, and I like to find people who haven't ever done it before because there's literal treasure in people's hearts.
Yes.
You know, and I just feel like I get to be that treasure hunter and dig it out and share it with the world and showcase, you know, the beauty inside each person and how important it is to take seriously those creative gifts.
And yet there is a trick to building the confidence or unlocking the feeling of vulnerability and freedom for someone to truly connect with their creative side.
Correct.
How does the cafe help connect the people of the town to that creativity?
So I have a classroom where I teach art classes, or I have one of my baristas has facilitated like community crafting classes, that kind of thing. I teach watercolor and acrylic, ceramic and pottery in there. And it's just been a lot of fun. Something I love to say in my classes is this is where perfectionism comes to die, because the people who have the highest anxiety tend to also have a high rate of perfectionism.
Yes.
And you need to make a mess on the outside to deal with that mess on the inside. You need to get it out. You know, like, don't judge what you're doing. Sometimes it's about the process. And like, so often we want the product. We want the outcome to be perfect. And, you know, that's just asking for anxiety.
Talk to me about the community response to Studio Cafe.
It's been awesome. It's been so good. I honestly believe we live in the best town in the world. like I love Warsaw so much. They've supported us. They've cheered us on. I wouldn't live anywhere else.
As a woman myself, but not entrepreneurial at all, I'm sort of in awe of what you're able to accomplish in such a short period of time. It's absolutely inspiring. And I think other women can be inspired by that too. If they have a dream, right? If some night they have a dream and they wake up and they're like, something's calling me to do this.
Yes.
The advice that you would give them is to
cultivate the dream. Take seriously the dreams of your heart. If there is something that you love and you cannot stop thinking about it, take one step in the direction of that thing and see what happens. I guarantee another door will open and you can take another step.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time with us today.
Well, thank you for
coming.
This has
been lovely.
Good. I'm so glad. I'm glad you're here.
The coffee was delicious. I wish we could have stayed long enough to throw some pottery on the wheel. Well, up next, grab some popcorn and get settled for a great hero story. We'll meet Tammy Traitline, who saved the last remaining movie theater in Wyoming County, and she was just getting started. We'll be right back.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. And to wrap up our episode in Warsaw, we meet Tammy Traitline, owner of the Spotlight Theater. When the county's last movie house had closed for the third time, Tammy stepped in. What she and her husband built isn't just a place to see a film, it's a place the whole community feels seen. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us this afternoon.
I'm excited to be here.
We're literally right here in the lobby, which is great. The moment you open the doors, I can smell the popcorn. What made you and your husband even consider buying a movie theater in a small town like Warsaw?
So for the amount of time we had been here, which wasn't much at that point, you're talking about maybe 5 years, the theater was closing for the third time. And we just felt that this community couldn't be without it. At that point, half of the people here were under the poverty line or one-car families.
And so their only option was to take their one vehicle, travel a great distance, spend a lot of money to get to see a show.
Very much.
Well, you've got a background in speech therapy, which we can talk about in a minute. Your husband is actually a doctor.
He is.
So this isn't exactly in your wheelhouse.
Not at all. And it was a huge learning curve.
What gave you the confidence to take the leap?
We already owned two businesses, and okay. We just felt that maybe the magic was missing was bringing a business perspective in it to make it a little bit more steady to continue on through the future. You had to understand how the movie industry worked well, and you had to be able to turn over your movies fast enough to bring new ones in all the time. And when we bought it, it was one screen, 500 seats, which meant we had one movie for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time.
So you couldn't take that one movie, like you couldn't take the one screen and show, let's say, one movie at 2 o'clock, but a different one at 7 o'clock.
Correct. That is a huge no-no in the movie industry.
Before Tammy could plan for any major upgrades, the first step was to install a digital projector and get the theater reopened.
Opening day was nerves and chaos. We dressed up in tuxes and ball gowns. We had a sold-out crowd. We welcomed everybody and thanked them for believing in us. Many of them had come and helped us paint to get open. And then we went upstairs to use our brand new digital projector, and it did not start. So we had to go back down and explain that we were struggling with our server and connecting to Disney, but if everyone just held tight, we got it working and off we went to a sold-out crowd to watch Frozen.
How did you feel when Frozen was playing up on that screen?
Near tears.
At what point did you realize that the one screen, though, wasn't going to cut it, and how did you go about changing that?
There's an annual conference every year in the spring for all the national theater owners. And we attended that, and there were some independent meetings, and we realized this is a numbers game. So we came back, worked with some local contractors, and basically cut this box of a movie theater in half and the back half in half again, and created something where we could have three movies going at once.
Obviously smaller than one large screen.
But proportional. So even if you're in our 90-seat theaters, it actually feels like you're in the large theater. You're actually closer to the screen,
yes.
And it looks bigger proportionally.
Accessibility is a large part of your business model now and your philosophy for offering a movie theater to people.
We realize there's a whole area of people who don't come because they don't want their kids up and making noise. It's too loud. They can't guarantee that they can deal with when the lights all of a sudden go down. So we saw the need to put in sensory shows. We don't turn off the lights, or we only dim them to halfway and they will stay on in that position.
Mm-hmm.
We put one trailer or no trailers, and we decreased the volume in half.
Why was that important to you?
I saw parents who never left their house to even grocery shop and do other things. And now you have, it might be the whole family has needs or one child, and the whole family is stuck at home because they're worried about taking someone. And no one should ever worry about what their relative is going to be like in public. They are just who they are.
And so wheelchair accessibility was another challenge. Only one of the theaters is completely accessible. What happens if the movie someone wants to see is on a different screen?
Our community knows for this location, if you want to come by wheelchair, you need to give us a full movie head start, and then we can work on switching the projectors to get the movie they want in Auditorium 1.
Talk to me about the community response to you opening or making sure that this theater did not close.
They love it. A bunch of them remember when we first opened this Warsaw location, and like the colors you see on the walls and concession is what everyone helped us paint when we opened.
Wow.
And most of those kids are grown. And so you can see like a little baby print footprint on one of the photos, paintings that they did of popcorn. And that kid is now, you know, a fourth grader walking around.
So the theater does offer a lot of young people that first job experience.
It does. It does.
And you're here to teach them not just how to scoop popcorn and fill a soda cup. You're teaching them life skills that they're going to take to their next job.
That is my hope. It's going to be a first job for 90% of the people that work for us. Sometimes literally our training is your goal for the next 2 months when we meet again is you have to talk to 10 customers every shift because some of them are scared. But like that's part of being here. So we work really hard to train people to do that. We don't have a job application. You have to bring a resume. No high school really has job experience, but I'm like, it doesn't have to be pretty. It's just the process of going through it. It's going to make it so much easier for your lifelong job if you've already had to make a resume job now.
You own a completely other business that does gourmet popcorn.
We do, yes.
How did that happen?
So we closed for COVID and we were like, what else can we do with this space? When everything reopened, I went to Chicago to learn how to make gourmet popcorn in different flavors and mixes. And now we go to the local farmers market and we're in a bunch of the local farm stands and shops like Studio Cafe.
We were there earlier today and I saw your popcorn.
It is. Yes. So and it's just, you know, a little fun extra magic.
There's also a real network of women owned businesses in this town.
A huge one.
What's that meant to you to be part of that circle and how do you support each other?
I don't know a single woman run business that doesn't feel like they can't pick up the phone and ask somebody else, how are you handling packaging? How are you handling your point of sale? Like working with other business owners is huge.
Wow. It has been wonderful spending the day here. And I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing. Movies are the thing that got me into the communications business and the media industry. And I can see how much it means to this small town to have Spotlight Theater here for it.
Well, we are really thrilled to be here.
In Warsaw, we met three remarkable women. Each saw a need and answered it, creating spaces that feed, inspire, and bring people together. That's a wrap on this episode of Tapestry. Catch up anytime at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.